Nationalism and politics had become inextricably bound up with each other during the early 1930s. The post-war rivalry between international shipping companies had intensified, and each great ship that was launched was imbued with ideas of patriotism and aspirations to maritime superiority. The international shipping companies were sensitive to political developments in other countries, especially the ominous rise of the National Socialist Party in Germany. The issue of whether foreign visitors should offer the Heil Hitler salute when visiting the country was broached in November 1933, just 10 months after Hitler came to power, in the Canadian Pacific Gazette, the onboard newspaper of the Empress of Britain. The leading German newspaper, the Deutsche Allgemeine Zeitung, had already recommended that foreign visitors should wear special identification badges, as Germany is anxious to avoid any further unpleasantness, such as that which followed the attacks on British and American citizens who failed to give the Hitler salute. With Germany resurgent under Hitler, the rise of National Socialism had profound repercussions for that nation's merchant navy. Hitler intended to reward those supporters who had swept the Nazis to power in 1933. The Strength Through Joy initiative encompassed the building of 2 cruise ships, with single-class accommodation on board for model workers. At 6:42 p.m., a second fire alarm rings. A few minutes later, Monsignor Benoît de Sinity, the vigorous and youthful-looking 50-year-old vicar-general of the Archdiocese of Paris, leaves his residence on Rue des Oursins, a medieval street near the cathedral, once called Rue d'Enfer, Hell Street, and jumps on his scooter. Heading towards the Church of Notre-Dame-des-Champs, on Boulevard Montparnasse for an evening of prayers, Monsignor de Sinity zips through the narrow streets of the island encircling the cathedral, Rue Chanoinesse, then Rue du Cloître Notre-Dame, and is about to cross the Seine at Pont de l'Archevêché, when he briefly looks in his side mirror. He slams on the brakes and turns his head towards Notre-Dame. Flames are leaping out of the cathedral's roof. "Come along and say hello to a computer," my maths teacher said one morning. It was 1967, and I wondered what had inspired her to say that. She was a nun, Sister Mary Philip, and it wasn't something I'd have expected her to say. Had she been watching Star Trek or Tomorrow's World on the TV? Was she serious? "Who would like to come? I'm organising a trip to Manchester." Hands shot up. "Yes, please." I'd seen computers in movies. Batman with his navigation aid computer in the Batcave, tracking the baddies around Gotham City. A ship, controlled by a central computer in The Human Computer Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. I could only imagine what they were capable of. We headed for the John Dalton College of Technology in Manchester, opened by Harold Wilson only a year earlier. Sister Mary Philip's excitement was infectious. Churches are designed for normative bodies and minds, bodies that can sit in pews without pain, minds that are not overwhelmed by bright lights or loud music, bodies that can read words on a projector, minds that can understand what happens in a service. What about those of us with more divergent bodies and minds? We don't fit so easily. In buildings that are designed around the normal body and mind of an ideal worshipper, church communities can struggle to accommodate disabled people. Church buildings are a mirror of a community's values and attitudes towards disabled people. A church's architecture usually reflects the attitude and the pocketbook of the congregation's leadership and members, writes disability theologian Kathy Black. Anchored alongside the Mary Rose in Portsmouth Harbour was the flagship, the Henry Grâce à Dieu. Here the King, Henry VIII, was in council with the Lord Admiral of the Fleet, Viscount Lisle, and the Mary Rose's commander, Vice Admiral George Carew. A French fleet had set sail for England 12 days previously and was expected to engage the English in battle the next day. As the three men schemed, Lyle sketched a battle plan on the back of a document that happened to be lying on the table. It placed the Mary Rose, one of the fleet's bigger warships, at the centre of the coming engagement. By the end of the following day, almost all of the crew of the Mary Rose were dead, drowned when she sank only a few minutes after going into battle.